Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Playful Humans podcast. I'm your host, Mike Montague, and my guest this week is David Cutler. He is the author of The Game of Innovation. You can conquer challenges, you can level up your team, and you can play to win with the new book. Find it at thepuzzlercompany.com/book. thepuzzlercompany.com/book. You can find Playful Humans at playfulhumans.com. Pretty easy to remember on those two. So go check them out. The link's in the show notes. If you're looking for more fun, flow, fulfillment in your life, if you're looking for creativity, culture, innovation, and more opportunities, you're in the right spot. Stay tuned. Here we go. One more woohoo, David. All right, here we go. We like to start with the joke of the week. The joke of the week is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks. I could do my own taxes, but I am not Intuit. The joke of the week is, why did Indiana Jones carry around an owl that could chew bubble gum?
Why is that?
It chews wisely. Here you go. Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. Do you have a joke for us?
Well, I got something about, I got a true story, like based on a true story. So my daughter and I were traveling down to Disney, which is, as you know, it's in Florida, it's in Kissimmee. But she kept saying it was like Kissimmee. And I'm like, no, it's Kissimmee. And she's Kissimmee. And so we were going back and forth and back and forth, and it was going nowhere. So finally, I'm like, we got to get this settled. We got to ask a local. So I pull over, we go into this place, and we ask the guy at the counter, you know, can you settle this debate for us? How do you pronounce the name of this place? To which he responded, Burger King.
Nice.
That actually awesome. Happened. Maybe not.
That's a good one. I host game shows for a living, and the other night I had one of the funniest answers. We were playing the big wheel game where, you know, you guess letters to solve the puzzle. And I asked him for a consonant, and he said North America.
That's lovely.
So that was a good one. I got a kick out of that. Yeah, I'm using that one now from now on in every show. So let's talk about you and the new book, The Game of Innovation. You can find it at thepuzzlercompany.com/book. But how did you get here? How did you get to playing games and creativity and innovation?
You know, for a long time, I've been working with all kinds of communities trying to solve problems. And often we'll go through these experiences where they're working on different teams to come up with some big idea solution. And often we'll end like a tournament where they'll share their ideas with an audience and judges for feedback and awards and likes. It was a long time till we figured out what exactly is it we're doing. At first we were calling them, you know, is it a retreat? It's definitely not a spa. Someone says it's like a boot camp because we work really hard. And when we came up with this notion that actually we're playing a game, it changed everything. Ultimately, game actually became an acronym that stands for something, a loose structure, which is guidelines, arena, materials, and experience. And we started really gamifying the whole process, and it just transformed innovation.
So let's start with that big lesson first, because you said you're doing a lot of hard work. And I think sometimes people make the mistake. They think work and play are opposites. But for me, they're not. The opposite of work is like sloth that's laying on the couch watching Netflix. Play is like the fun uncle to work. And oftentimes, especially in creativity, when you try to say, hey, work really hard at finding a creative solution, your brain locks down and you get into fight or flight mode and you can only come up with one maybe most viable option. But when you start playing with ideas, it actually allows a lot more of that creativity and innovation. So talk to us about your structure. And I love what you said about the game acronym, because it's sort of the environment. You have to actually set yourself up in the situation to have creativity, kind of like falling asleep. So I'm stealing a lot of your answer here. But, you know, if you force yourself to fall asleep, you're not going to do it. But I read your book, too, so I'm not going to steal all the good stuff. But if you try to force yourself to go to sleep, it's going to be less likely to happen. You kind of got to create the environment for sleep where it's dark, it's relaxing, it's peaceful, and then you let yourself go to sleep. And I feel like the same thing with creative ideas. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some of the problems we tackle are really serious. Sometimes they're life or death or of the organization of human beings. They're important in order to increase revenue or to make a better experience for your users. And yet people will be more creative when they're engaged in the process, which doesn't mean it's always laughter all the time. You know, there are really stressful moments. Innovation is hard work. But within the context of a game, you know, what's so great about a game is there's accountability to rules and results. There are clear guidelines about what needs to be achieved. And I think when people are playing a game, they're often willing to consider possibilities and to think more creatively than they would in the real world, where the consequences are, you know, the framework is like what we've always done, as opposed to what Right. could be, especially if the game is written in such a way that it demands that. So I have found that with so many kinds of communities, if it's playful, the ideas are much better, but there's got to be a focus that matches that playfulness.
Yeah. So talk to us about some of those constraints, because I agree with you. It can't just be willy-nilly, no timelines, no deadline. It doesn't help creativity either. So what is the framework, or what are some maybe tips to help us set up environments to be more innovative?
Well, I love that you mentioned constraints, because sometimes I'll meet people who are super excited about coming up with new ideas. And I'll ask them, well, what are the constraints of your challenge? And I'll be like, Dave, why do we need constraints? Let's take off the shackles, you know, let our imaginations run wild, like my kids after bedtime. and it's a great sentiment. The problem is, the road to everywhere leads to surprisingly few destinations. It's like if you go to a restaurant and there's a menu there. I did this once, I think, in this one place. I went, literally, they had a 96-page menu. And at the beginning, it's awesome. I mean, you could get anything, but you pretty soon get overwhelmed by choice. And, you know, ultimately, it's like, I guess I'll have the cheeseburger, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
what are you going to do with that? What is so amazing, and I think this is a big takeaway from many people who go through innovation games, is that we will impose certain kinds of constraints along the way that force them to think in a much bigger and a broader way. So, for example, if we were, planning a conference, let's say, and I'm like, come up with great ideas for a conference. I mean, maybe they'll be big ideas, maybe not, probably a lot like what we've always done before. But if I said, you know, no matter what you do, it has to somehow involve a pineapple or the death of TikTok or something like that, it gives a focus and it opens up parts of the imagination that just would not be accessible if everything was possible, which generally means my normal point of reference.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. For me, when I think about creativities, I always kind of think of it like a puzzle. And obviously, that's the name of your company, too. But it's making different connections between ideas. So if you don't have constraints, there's no connections. There's no things to kind of spur ideas. But if you say, I want to invent the TikTok of sales training, you go, okay, well, I could see how we could do that. Or I like, especially three things seems to be the magic number for me, but I'd love any guidance you have of like, when you put three things in the mix, people normally draw a straight line between two items. But when you put three, you start thinking, okay, there's a few ways this could work and ways we could lean on it. But what are maybe some common misconceptions that people have about brainstorming events or innovation initiatives? And what are some maybe tips that you could give us to do it better?
Well, one of the things when you're asking about brainstorming tips, you know, one of the brainstorming mantras is there are no bad ideas when you're brainstorming, right? And the idea being that you just put it out there and you know, you shouldn't worry about bad ideas. But I often think about, what about terrible ideas? You know, like, what about the worst possible ideas that you could come up with that just make you convulse, that make you sick to your stomach? Because those are the ideas that have energy. you know, what so often happens when your brainstorming is just like the kind of the meh ideas, like they're fine. You can take them or leave it. They're not bad. They're not really good. They're just not exciting. They're just kind of normal, but awful ideas are really potent. So one of the exercises I love to do is called, I call it disaster storming. And what we'll often do is we'll put people around a room on different teams. And I'll ask them, here's the problem, whatever it is, come up with the worst imaginable solutions you can imagine. I mean, borderline illegal if you need to. Just like push yourself, push the envelope. And then I'll have them rotate to another station so they inherit someone else's bad ideas. And you can see how repulsed they are by the whole thing. And so I'll ask them, go through, pick the worst one. Pick the one that you think is just the most awful thing. So they put a star by it. And then we go through a process where, all right, now being inspired by that awful idea, come up with a spectacular one. And what's surprising for people is that they're often not that far enough, that they're not that far apart, you know, and by having such a terrible thing, you just turn it around just this much and you come up with a way better idea than you could have if I just said, come up with a great idea.
Well, I love that, I guess, experience, because it's the same as I found in life and your brand and your marketing and your product, that if you're trying to make something for everybody and you're trying to play it safe, you're going to end up with something really boring and lame, and you're not going to know how to talk about it or sell it. But if you are feeling it, even if it's a bad feeling, there's something that you're afraid of there. And that something that you're afraid of is the magic part. So if we can look at like how we use that, that pain or that fear to sell the product, or how do we relieve that for us in this thing, then we can go for the opposite, like you said. But yeah, I've always found that in life, people do that. They try to avoid the pain. So they try to stay in the safe comfort zone where I know I'm not going to get hurt and I might not have a really great day. If it happens, great. But, you know, I can watch TV. I can eat the same thing I ate yesterday and I can do the same things and I'll survive. But you don't get any really spectacular ideas and you don't, you know, ever risk that spectacular failure. One of the other guests we've had on the podcast is one of my favorite of all time, named Steve Sims. He's a concierge for billionaires. And he says, like, go for the stupid idea. Go for the ridiculous. There's no way that could work. And then if you come back from that, even your idea that's one step short of that is way better than what you would have done if we say, how can we be 10% better than we were last year?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and when you talk about hard decisions, what some people have lots of ideas. And one of the hardest decisions to make is to say no to something, right? Because we try to be all things to all people instead of knowing what you stand against. And so much of the time I've seen communities, you know, they're really good about brainstorming. What are our most important values? What do we really, you know, what are the outcomes we want most? So you make this beautiful list of 18 items and it's like, okay, now we got to pick three. And then they want to rebel. Why would you kill any of your babies? Why would you want to get rid of any of these great ideas? They're all wonderful ideas. But you cannot be all things to all people. And so often I'll ask, okay, close your eyes and see how many of them can you remember? And, you know, most people can't get more than five or six. And if you can't even remember them, how can you possibly say, well, the most important thing we do are these 18 things. So here's another tool that's been really effective. You know, the mission statement. Every organization's got their mission statement. We stand for this. And in theory, these should be the documents that, you know, showcase your unique, distinctive value. In reality, it's often this flowery mumbo jumbo that is neither substantiated nor, you know, interesting in any way. And so one of the tools that I like to use, I call it a negative mission statement. And so the idea is at the beginning of this, you commit to not doing something that about 98% of your competitors do. So we are a library and we commit to not having bookshelves. You know, we are, an airplane and we commit to not having rows of seats, whatever it is. Once you take that out of the equation, you know, by saying no to something, all of a sudden you've freed up resources of money and time and energy. Well, what are you going to do in place of those things? And that's often very effective at getting organizations to think in new ways.
Yeah, so good. I use that a lot in marketing and stuff too, that you have to stand for something, but you also have to know who is not your client. And so many people try to sell to everybody, or they want to scale and they want to get more clients, but it's one of those backwards laws of humanity that the more you try to be for everybody, the less you are for anybody. Yeah. And the more you clearly set up those guidelines, those roadblocks, those constraints, the more people are attracted to that because they know, oh, that's not for me. I'm never going to be that guy or that girl. I'm never going on an airplane that has seats like that. Then great. They know that they're off the things, but the people that love it now are on board. They're never going to go to the regular airline again because that's exactly who they're looking for.
Exactly. And it's crazy.
I was just going to add that, like, the crazy part is we forget that there's like 10 billion people on the planet, and our problem is normally irrelevance, not appealing to them. It's not that we don't have any affinity with people. It's that they have no feelings whatsoever towards us. They don't
total
even
know. Apathy. You know, they actually sometimes that negativity. I heard about a dating service that what you would do instead of talking, you know, most of the time you're like, oh, I like a sense of humor. I like, you know, roses. I like your, you know, international travel. And so this whole brand, the whole idea is, you just talk about the things that drive you crazy, the things you don't like. And it turns out that people bond a lot more over the things they hate than often the things that they love. And you know, so you can find, if you're like really opposed to chipmunks and someone else is too, you might find a great bond in that.
Yeah, I think that's great. And it takes me to my last question here specifically that you deal with in the book. And then I want to get to know you a little bit better. But you mentioned culture here, and I feel like a culture of playfulness and gamification and innovation is much different than what we see in normal organizations. And even in families, in cities, in relationships, like we were just talking about. So how do you think about culture and how these this game of innovation applies to relationships?
Well, it's everything. You know, what brings people together often is that they're working on a team towards some kind of common and collective goal. One of the biggest missed opportunities, I think, in so many organizations is the notion of the meeting. You know, most people look at meetings as these necessary but evils that just, you know, ruin your life or whatever it is. And you got to participate in it because it's part of the job. But, you know, from my perspective, meetings could be the most amazing part of the week because this is when your talent is convened. This is when you should get the biggest things done. But so much of the time, the culture in really sector after sector, almost ubiquitous, is that when you come into a meeting, at worst, we're going to dump this pour this information into your brain that may or may not be relevant. And as best, if we're really cool, we're going to allow for a couple of questions and we're going to answer your questions and tell you right. The way that it is. It's like, there might be another form for that. Why not utilize this time to actually work on teams and solve problems? And even in 45 minutes or an hour, if it's designed well, you can actually solve a problem, or at least a part of a problem. I call it a sector solution. You can actually get something done. And not only are people building a sense of community and culture through doing it, but you're actually advancing the cause of the organization.
Yeah, I love that. And I've always said, like, if you're making announcements, just record a video and send it to everybody. We don't need to do that in a meeting. And the other side of that, I think, is so powerful. I was just happened to be watching the Beatles Get Back sessions on Disney Plus. I don't know if you've seen those, but yeah, really cool in the way that they were working together. And you can tell it's at a point in their career where they're about to break up. I think Paul even suggests it at some point. He's like, well, why don't we just quit? Like, if this is what we're doing and we're just going to play it safe and be lame, then let's not be lame. But he's like, if you guys want to do this, like, let's do it. Let's be rock stars again. And he kind of mentioned, like, we used to, we keep talking about the good old days when we used to be creative and rock stars. He's like, now is our chance. We're still rock stars. We can still do this, and really talking them into it. But I love that they were building on each other and they were playing off each other. And somebody would say, you know, that's cheesy. And they're like, well, let's do it cheesy first and then we'll make it interesting. And other people would say that works, but this could work too. And it really was an interesting creative process where you saw four people in a room trying to work out a problem in a way that was a really collaborative session. It wasn't a meeting. It was a play and a game that they put constraints on themselves for that. They gave them 2 weeks to write 14 songs and perform it live. And they were, you know, ready to give up at every different point, but just a really cool example of that. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your career and outside of work. What do you do for fun? Have you always had this playful job and found innovation as your calling, or did you have a boring corporate job and then have to rediscover the power of play?
You know, it's really interesting when I've been thinking about this before we talked, you know, about the role that play has played in my life. My early childhood is quite different. You know, I can't remember quite what happened first, music lessons or my mom yelling at me, but I started to play classical piano at a very early age. Yet even back then, I was not like the other kids. So I would be practicing the Mozart and just, you know, changing it up a little bit to, you know, to make it better, you know, changing the notes and the rhythms. And I'm not sure it was, but beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, right? So, well, that did not make my mom happy. She's like, you know, that's not what it says, David. Play what's on the page, eat your vegetables, whatever. She yelled at me a lot. but there was always something inside of me that had to find my own creativity and my own voice. And it was those inclinations that ultimately led me as a musician towards jazz and composition, to places where creativity was not just permitted, but it was requisite to making things happen. And what I was thinking about before we talked is, you know, so the two big things that have really shaped my life, music and innovation games, they're both things that we play. And yet so often, you know, we use that word, and I love that word, we play music. And yet I see so many musicians who that is not the thing that they are doing, right? Before they go on stage, there are so many of the most famous orchestral musicians who can't walk out on a stage without taking drugs to calm themselves down, because there's nothing that makes them more stressed out than performing music.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
So it becomes like I'm stressing music or I'm fearing music. But I love the notion of the thing that we do is to play. And when that happens, it's like, you know, you were mentioning before. I mean, it's really hard work to get to a level of excellence. Yet if you truly are playing it, you'll be more liberated. And the audience will be more impacted from it because you are having such a good time with all of it. And I think the same thing goes to solving problems. You know, you're talking about that, like, go to sleep now, right? If the problem you have to solve is so urgent and, you know, you might lose your job and all of these things, I mean, we just close up and try to go to the safest status quo space. But if you're challenged, we've got big problems. So now let's play a game and see the most creative way we might dream up a solution. When you play, extraordinary things can happen.
Oh, man, I love that. That's really well said. And I wanted to add on one thing, which is when you think about the most successful people, the most well-known people, the highest paid professions in the world, do you act in a work or do you act in a play? Do you play politics or do you work politics? You know, do you play music or play sports or do you work sports? All of the people that we know as like famous cultural icons and high paid professionals, even politics, right? We play politics. Yeah. We don't work politics. Highest paid people play for a living, or they use that word. And I think that's a really interesting point.
Your example about the Beatles, even for such a creative group like that, even they hit that point that you were talking about where we're just reliving the past and the likes, and they had to remind themselves about the value of play and experimentation and growth, all those things. So it can happen really to big corporations. It can happen to tiny startups. It can even happen to the Beatles. Luckily, they found a way forward.
I love it too. And I don't know if you watched it or need to rewatch it again, but great example of your terrible idea brainstorming. They were like, well, what's the worst place we could play this concert? They were like, what if we went to the, where in England is the, you know, like the royal family and stuff. We were like, what if we just set up and we played right on their front lawn and the police were dragging us away while we were playing? And they were like, well, if we wanted to get beat up, we could go play in Manila again. Like, that was a disaster. And they were thinking about what's the craziest, biggest spectacle that they could do in their brainstorming. It was awesome. But I want to know for you, last question here. What is the most fun for you? Do you have any fun bucket list items or things that you just always have to remember is like, this is, I'm doing just for fun. It's not for work. This is for me. And this is when I feel like I'm at my best as a human being.
I love travel because you're always engaging people with new values and perspectives and the like. So I find, you know, it takes being with people who aren't like you or in circumstances that aren't like your comfort zone to really realize who you are, maybe because it changes you in some way, maybe because it confirms a suspicion about you. So I think I find my, you know, that's a strange question for me in a way, because I play for a living. So, you know, we only have this one life. So when I'm off of work, I try and be in that moment. But when I am working, maybe I'm getting paid for it. Maybe I'm doing something. But the most important thing is to be in that moment, to be intentional, and to make that the greatest moment of my life, because I'm only going to have that moment one time.
Oh, great answer. And we hear that a lot from people on this podcast because I interview people who play for a living. So work does happen, but I agree with you. For me, it's when I'm in the moment, when I'm fully present, when I'm doing something like this or I'm on stage, I'm not distracted by other thoughts. I'm not in my head. I'm just really fully present in my life. And that's when I feel like I have the most fun. Would you like to play a game, David?
I would love. You're asking me if I want to play a game? Sure, of course.
That's another fun thing about doing this podcast with people is I haven't said it, had anybody say no yet. So I'm spinning our wheel of games. There are 10 games that it could land on. Once again, we're talking with David Cutler, author of The Game of Innovations. You can find it at thepuzzlercompany.com/book. And you got... Survey says it's pretty easy. We asked 100 people a question. There are the top five answers here or so on the cards. If you get one of them in 2 out of 3 questions, you win. The first question is, when you hear a strange noise in the house during the night, what exactly do you do about it? What do you think people said?
I go in the bathroom, take care of it. Or the wrong kind of house. Can I change my answer?
I think you better. Yeah. I'm not seeing that one on the card.
Yeah. When I hear a strange sound in the house, I turn on the light and go check it out.
Investigate. Number one answer. There you go. Congratulations. I make my wife go check it out. Number two.
That was the number one and one plus answer.
After finally moving the couch for the first time in 10 years, what's something you might find underneath it?
My ex-girlfriend? No. that's not it either.
We're too creative for these answers.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what other people are saying. I would say coins.
Money or change, number one answer. Again, I suppose I should have given the other ones. Hear a noise if you're playing the home game. Nothing, go back to sleep. Get scared and panic. Wake up, your spouse is on there. Call the police. Get a weapon and stay quiet were the other options. On this one, we got money, change, dust bunnies, old food, toys, clothes, and the remote. All popular answers. Now, you've already won the game, but last question. Give me a specific reason you wouldn't want to be married to you.
Oh, wow. That is a hard, and you have 5 answers for that question from other people.
Yes.
About why they wouldn't want to be married to themselves.
Yeah.
Toothbrushing habits.
Oh, you did not get this one. All right. So we have opposites. We have you're a slob or too messy, or you're a neat freak. Both of those in the top three. Too moody or grumpy, or too outspoken. I feel like those go together. And stubborn were the top there. But you win. You win a free 30-second commercial. Any asks or gives for the audience? How can we help you, or you help us?
Wow. Well, thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. I hope that you'll check out The Game of Innovation. You know, one of the things that's really interesting about this book, and certainly different than my other books, is it's actually a visual book. So it's in full color. I worked with an illustrator and a designer, and we've both got our copies right here. And so it not only talks about innovation, it looks like innovation. And so we are always working on how do you innovate the process of innovation. So it goes through a number of flexible tools. It's pretty problem agnostic. It's more focused on the process of gamifying creative challenges and making your team work better. But you are the creative genius that is needed to actually do the innovating.
That is awesome. David Cutler, author of The Game of Innovation and thepuzzlercompany.com/book. Go check that out. Again, for more information on Playful Humans, you can go to playfulhumans.com. We have a personality quiz there. You can find out which playful personality you are. Maybe you're an athlete. Maybe you're a puzzler. Maybe you are an explorer or a jokester and a prankster. You can go find out at playfulhumans.com/quiz and join the community. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening right now, or send it to somebody else that needs to hear it. I think that's the best way to engage with the podcast. Until next time, if you can't be good at it. That's what I always say. Go play, everybody. Don't wait for tomorrow.